Welcome to a worldwide online meeting with John Sherman, broadcast live from Ojai, California, on February 10th, 2013.
Hello, everybody. This is John. I am tickled pig to be here with you. Thank you for coming. I've been saying for some time now, for a long time, that anything I know that's worthwhile, I've learned in the course of conversation with you and others like you over many years. And this is true. There's nothing about what I say and what I encourage people to do and about my understanding of what we're about here that has come to me in some solitary insight that descended upon me. Everything I speak about, it has been shaped and informed and developed over, 14 years of speaking to people in which we all have been trying to see clearly what's up, what's up with humanity. What's up with being human? What's up with the apparent unsatisfactoriness of life as a human being? And we've been doing that together over 14 years now. And kind of an interesting aspect of that is that one of the most surprising and important things I've learned over those years is that human beings cannot live without each other. We just don't do well as solitary creatures. We're a fragile animal. We're not very strong. We don't have big teeth. We don't have armored plates that protect us and so forth and so on. We are, as we have been called by others, naked apes and quite fragile. It's actually quite amazing that we have caught on as we have in this world. And it's clear to me that our evolutionary development as a kind of tribal animal is all that saved us. It's really clear to me that humans actually cannot live alone, except in lives that are short, brutal, and merciless, and lead nowhere. Imagine yourself, for example, in a world where everyone else has disappeared for reasons unknown, but the reasons are irrelevant, leaving behind all the detritus and production of the human species. And you're alone there, and the sole owner of the entire range and output of human accomplishment at your disposal. What would you do? I think that what I would do would be to start looking immediately for someone else. Not for companionship or love necessarily or any other thing, but for survival. Because humans literally cannot live alone. And yet, strangely, while we're suffering in the fog of fear, when we're searching desperately for a solution to the hopelessness of our lives, our first assumption is that we are alone and that we cannot even reveal our helpless weakness and that we need somehow to save ourselves by hook or by crook before we can do anything else, that we are on our own. And when in the course of our lives, when the course of our lives leads us to the astonishing claim that we are one, I mean, get this. We come to this astonishing claim that we are one creature, that we are free and safe and born to experience the world and ourselves. We throw ourselves into the adventure of seeking enlightenment, tightly wrapped in a cocoon of self-referential fear and loathing that seeks nothing but escape from the life we fear, seeks nothing but emptiness and no mind, solitariness. Now, the way and the wherefore and the whys that this takes place when we come upon these ideas is quickly made clear once the fear is gone, if you reflect on it at all. And I'm not going to try to talk about that. I just wanted to call attention to the fact that what we're finding here more and more, because what we have tried to create and make available to people is not so much a teaching as a community of people who have come upon the actual solution to the problem and who are together acting as a community to find a way to bring it to the rest of our human community, of the world of human beings. And what we're finding more and more, and we know we've made available forums and chat rooms and everything we can possibly come up with in order to make it possible for all of us to be in the conversation about what we're doing and what we're learning and what is being revealed to us all in the course of the introduction to life that comes when the context of fear is gone. And this conversation is taking place among those who have lost the underlying context of fear as the default relationship to life. And this conversation is deeply encouraging, helpful, provides rich practical understanding, and enriches human life like nothing else in a way that no amount of solitary reflection can match. I've been thinking about this whole thing over the last week or so, and I just wanted to call to your attention that what we're about here is not solitary liberation. It's not the enlightenment of an individual. What we're about here is the eradication of a kind of autoimmune disease that all of us suffer from, and that takes the form of an underlying sense that life is to be feared and mistrusted. What we're about here is learning together and understanding together what that means and what comes of that once the fear is gone. And what we're about here is working together and learning together to find a way to effectively make this offering to the entire community of human beings. I cannot stress enough that we are in this together, that we have, you know, different roles, we have different things that we'll be called upon to do, we have different kind of lives. Some of our lives will be, there's just no telling how life unfolds. But we're in this together. No matter where we are, no matter where we go, no matter what we're doing, we are human beings in a world, a community of human beings, a tribal animal. And our tribe is the whole human species. One more thing I'm going to say here, just because it's an opportunity to deal with this. I have a thing from an Anon talk posting the other day, in which the writer says, "Dear John, you said in your podcast that when death happens, nothing happens. What about all the evidence for such things as rebirth and afterlife experiences? Could it be that the me that is here, untouched and always present, may be present for such after this life experiences too? If the personality dies after death, then how do we account for the number of NDEs? I guess he means, what's that mean, NDEs? Near-death experiences and past life regressions. Perhaps it has nothing to do with the looking, but maybe it does. If the purpose, consequence of waking up is to be free of the endless chain of cause and effect, which could essentially include reincarnation, etc., then is that what might happen with the looking? God knows, man. The purpose and consequence of the looking has nothing to do with freedom from the endless chain of cause and effect, such as the idea that the endless rebirth is that chain of cause and effect. It has nothing to do with that at all. It has to do with living human beings, alive in the body here with us, working and speaking and helping and hindering and doing all the things that human beings do, alive and here with us in the world. So long as there is experience for the personality, it's not dead. I mean, that's just kind of ipso facto, right? So if we have near-death experiences, the very name of them is, precludes the idea that what's happening there happens after death. Nothing happens after death. But this focus on such matters, on such kind of metaphysical and spiritual matters, as to what happens to me after death, as to what is death and what is life and what is rebirth, these matters are matters we are brought to by the fear. By the fear which would rather we sacrifice the life we have than take a chance on being harmed or hurt or killed by living life directly without separation from it. So long as there is experience, you are alive. That's just the case. When you die, I mean, I suspect, I don't know this because I have no sense whatsoever of ever having lived and died before. But when you die, my conviction is that that's just the end of it. And that's not bad news. Really, it's not. If nothing happens, what could be bad? The fear of death is the fear of life, masquerading as the fear of death. And when I talk about the fear of death, what I'm talking about here is that neurotic, obsessive preoccupation with the idea of death. Practical, ordinary, real life fear of death in the presence of a threat to life is natural, human, and keeps us from dying if we're lucky. But that neurotic, obsessive preoccupation with death, that goes away. I promise you. If you look, the fear will go. And when the fear goes, that neurotic preoccupation with the question of death goes with it. You'll see. We're going sane here. And what a difference it is, by the way, I just want to say for the record, what a difference it is to be able to speak to one another about these matters, matters which are intensely kind of sickly and deep-seated. Our ability to speak to one another about these matters gives us a way of of bringing these obsessive, neurotic preoccupations with anything out into the light of day. The light of day being the common experience of humanity considered together as a community, as one being, really. I hope that's helpful. I doubt that it is, because I really don't have too much to say about all that death business. Doesn't mean much to me. But I hope it's helpful to you, and I hope that you will look, just one time, see if you cannot just get the feel of that me that is here, that you speak of here. Just one time. And then let me know what happens. I really want to know, because we're all in this together. It's really true. Okay, that's my bit for today. Anybody wants to talk to me, all you have to do is raise your hands, and I'm pretty sure that Carla has let you know how to do that and so forth. Okay, good to see you here. Christopher.
I sort of agree with you, and I don't agree with you, John. when I do the looking, and I'm only so far along with it, but what I experience is that I sense something that simply exists, and something I would describe as timeless. That's what I sense when I look, and speaking for myself, it makes me kind of happy to think to myself once in a while that even though this wild world in which I live, it does tend to be, as far as I can see, quite fascinated with the whole notion of death, not in a good way, but as you're saying, in a kind of, I think you could say, neurotic way. Oh my God, it's disaster, and people write sad poems about it. But it seems to me that it's a rather enjoyable idea that this timeless something that I sense, and it comes across as quite real to me, it doesn't go anywhere when this particular event that you were speaking of happens. It existed previously. It exists later. If it is timeless, and that's again my experience, I rather like the idea that this wonderful something, that's always going to be what fundamentally my experience is. Anyway, that's what comes to mind to say, and I do appreciate you bringing the subject up.
That you are speaking of is a matter for reflection and philosophical consideration and so forth and so on. The question that as to the nature of this strange reality that I can only call by the name me. And I'm sure that we human beings will be wrestling with that and having fun with that and talking about that for a long time. But what I'm talking about is not whether it may well be, and I don't deny, I don't think it's unlikely, that all the fuss about the idea of an immortal self and things of that nature is reflective of an kind of insight into just what you're talking about. But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about whether me, this reality that certainly is me, that's the only me that's here. I'm not talking about its nature or its extent or its anything about it. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, in this case, I'm talking about me, this human creature, this flesh and blood body, this human mind that itself appears within and is affected by and nourished by this human body, this mind. That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the psychological personality, the flesh and blood body, the brain, the personality, the whole collection of characteristics and features that is me in this world. So I really don't have much interest. I used to have a lot of interest in that kind of stuff, and there's nothing wrong with having interest in it, but I've just kind of lost interest in it because I don't have much time for it anymore. I'm kind of my time is kind of taken up with this project that I'm involved in. But the point I'm making is that, well, I'm not sure what point I'm making is in this context, but it's just not worth fussing about. We are in love with death, and God knows we are. Not me, or you probably, but the human creature is and has been for a very long time in love with the idea of death. And it's that has produced the art and the and a lot of the religious ideas and the religious yearnings and so forth is that love affair with the idea of death. And the reason we're in love with the idea of death, the reason we're in love with it is because of the fear of life. This is not advanced philosophical musings here. This is the kind of thing that Freud noticed and others have noticed. And that is that we have this yearning for death, this attraction to death, this love affair with death. And I tell you that whole complex, and I'm not talking about you, Christopher, and I'm not talking about finding pleasure and satisfaction in the idea that this that I am deeply, perfectly, completely am is permanent. But we're in love with death because we are these creatures, these human creatures, this flesh and blood animal, this incredible, strange arising within the game of evolution. We love death because we fear life. And I tell you from my heart to everybody, when the fear of life departs and the first shock of unfiltered life rushing in begins to become natural to us, the whole thing about death becomes uninteresting. I mean, uninteresting in a philosophical or metaphysical sense. Maybe in a philosophical sense, it's still interesting to some, but not to me. But when the fear of life goes, who cares? Really. We're alive. We're not dead. We're alive. We're here. We're not silent, permanent, unmoving consciousness. We are living, breathing, human creatures, loving each other, hating each other, killing each other, helping each other, wanting each other, despising each other, indifferent to each other. We are flesh and blood human creatures. And when the obsessive interest in what happens at death is merely a way to distract us from what is already happening richly, fully, and with great bravado in life. And that's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the nature of this me here in a sense that is separate from this flesh and blood me here. Do you follow me?
Well, I think so, John. Yeah, and you know, in all of that, I do agree. Maybe it's a little bit of a poetic nature. I don't think it contradicts what you're saying. I still quite like the notion that this difficult to describe experience that I get when I look to the extent that I get it, I still kind of like the notion that let me put it this way, that it doesn't necessarily even depend on this physical apparatus and this brain that you're speaking of. So it's not, you know, it's not a big deal, really, to me. And I would hope that in my own life that it doesn't distract from that full experience of life that you're speaking of, which, you know, I really appreciate your ongoing focus on what's going on right now for, say, all of us on this line. You know, life is in motion. This movie is playing, and who would want to be anywhere else? I'm very happy to be in this experience, but I still. Just for myself, I quite like to, I guess once in a while, just remind myself that, in all truthfulness, if this body, you know, ceased to be, which, you know, it's going to do that probably, it is going to do that fairly soon, really, you know, 81 in May, you know, I mean, how much longer, really, can this go on, you know? I mean, maybe you do read people 102 and 108, and they're still lifting weights and climbing mountains. So, you know, there's ground, ground for a little optimism, maybe, but sooner or later. But really, setting all of that aside, I think that I just reverence what seems to me to be, by its nature, undying. I'm just glad for it and thankful for it.
Well, Christopher, I think we see eye to eye on that, and it's just that my focus is not on that kind of reflection. But if I think about it, you know, that silent me that we're speaking of here, I guess that what I would say about that, all that, is that we and everything else in the universe, everything else in the universe, everything in the universe is kind of the speech of that silent me. And I am certainly convinced, I don't have any way of proving it, and I don't see that it has any practical application, but I'm certainly convinced, I have no doubt whatsoever, that that silent me here is exactly the same entity as that silent me that you experience and all of you experience in the looking. But that's just kind of beside the point. The point of our presence here is to live as human beings, and part of the living as human beings is reflecting on matters like this. And seeing that perhaps they're beside the point, but they're delightful and interesting and satisfying in some way to bring intellectual prowess to reflection on matters like this. And as I said, if I were to say anything at all, my kind of underlying working assumption is that the entire universe is the speech of this silent me. Okay?
I do agree with you, John, and I'm very, very thankful to be sharing this journey with you and sharing in this silent speech with you. It's the biggest adventure there is, isn't it?
Yes, me too. And that is the power that untapped power of human community, of humans speaking to one another about being human. Okay?
Yep.
Okay, my friend. Good to see you.
You too, John.
Brett?
No, I really enjoyed this chat you two were having about this. And, you know, it's interesting. I totally hear what you're both saying at the same time, and maybe that is, you know, just proves that you're both kind of together on that, and yet,
we are.
Yeah, and like I would add, kind of maybe old school John Sherman, is that it's just all that really matters is looking, you know, and like just looking is everything, and it's sometimes like it's kind of ironic we have to chat with each other and come up with like ways of expounding on just that basic thing, which is what if you're so deeply immersed in looking, then all the fears and the worries and the what ifs don't even arise. You know, it's almost like you're just carried along in this. I don't want to say bubble, that's a concept, but you're just sort of carried along in this peaceful. Well, not even peaceful. It's just you're just carried along. You know, and you don't even really think about things like death, for example, of the body. But I mean, in my own personal experience, what I find happening is that everything sort of happens together. Like the fear of life, the fear of death, evaporate as the what Christopher was saying, as this sort of eternal aspect that you've always been is arising at the same time, and they sort of seem to all happen together so that you're never left hanging with a real existential dread of what's going to happen to you. You just sort of, like you said, you sort of carry it along in this way that you don't really have deep questions like that. You just sort of, maybe a trust, I don't know, maybe it's a trust or a sense that, like, that if anything, maybe even more beauty is going to happen after the body. Who knows? Like, it just seems like once you're on the I don't want to call it a roller coaster, but once you're on the track, that's it. You're on the track, and just let the track carry you, and it's going to be great no matter where you end up, you know? Does that make sense? I don't, I'm kind of babbling a little bit.
Yeah, it makes some sense. You know, I mean, and, you know, the thing about this is that, it's by conversation like this that, like, you might be sitting in your own place and I might be sitting in my own place and I'll be thinking about this and that and the other thing and I won't talk to anybody about it. And then when I start to talk to somebody about it, I realize that I really kind of don't know exactly what it is I'm talking about. But that's the value of these conversations, because we can clarify and focus our understanding of things as a result of talking to one another about it. Yeah. And in the past, we have had this deep dread. I mean, most of us have this deep dread of exposing what might look stupid or wrong or whatever. And that all comes from the context. And the fear of life is a context. It's not like a continuous experience of dread or anything of the kind. Dread itself is a symptom of the fear of life. That's the way the fear of life is experienced, is by its symptoms, by existential dread, by the fear of death, by antagonistic interrogation of everything that comes into your mind and consideration of whether it's going to hurt you or harm you and all that stuff. Those are the symptoms of the fear of life, and that's the way the fear of life is experienced. It's not experienced as a continuous experience of anything at all. It's very small. And that's why it is so easy to destroy. And what happens after that, and I don't know if you go to the forums or anything, but there's a lot of conversation going on there that goes directly to this matter of what happens after the fear is, the context is gone, and what is it like to be human and acting in the world in a mind that is free of the fear. And the consistent conclusion, and another interesting thing that's happening, I'm going to use this to be able to say this to everybody too, is that more and more in recent times, people are showing up who have come to us a year or two ago and then and did the looking and disappeared from sight and then have come back to speak about what has happened to them in the relationship with their own life. And it's always the same, and it's so confirming. And it always consists in the report that life is hard. Life is complicated, it's confusing, and it is strong. The experience of life is strong. And it is all absolutely everything that I have ever wanted. Not because it's all peaches and cream, not because there's no confusion, not because there's no continuously persisting neurotic tics and so forth and so on, but because it's being experienced directly here in the raw, not held at arm's length, not mitigated by the ways in which we have mitigated it in the past. So what you're describing is exactly what the people in the forums are describing and what I've been talking about all along, and your difficulty in expressing it is perfectly understandable. What happens as a result of the looking, and the looking just, you know, is something that doesn't last forever. And what happens as a result of the looking is that life rushes in. And it turns out that the experience of the direct, unmitigated, raw experience of life, it turns out that that, with all of its complication and so forth, is what we've always wanted. And we just couldn't possibly know that. You follow me?
Oh, yeah. No, I really feel, like I said, out of all the teachers that, you know, you always emphasize just the simple act of looking, you know, and you don't realize how, well, you probably do, of course, realize how helpful that is to people. It does something to shatter all the old kind of spiritual belief systems, whatever.
Yes, it's
like this beautiful way of shattering, and it's so simple. And it really does work. That's the good thing. And, you know, if people come into this like with thoughts of death and thoughts of the next life and, you know, thoughts of what's my life going to look like once I start looking? It's like, no, just look. And I guess the one word I could leave with is just that I guess that maybe trust comes. There's this sort of trust that whatever goes on, you know, these questions that you originally brought up in your opening about death and all, it just you have the sense that if life is beautiful, then death is beautiful. It has to be. It's all beautiful. You know, there's no worry. Where's the worry? It's all going to be beautiful. You don't have to know what beauty is to appreciate beauty. It's beauty, you know, and I guess with the looking, so I guess without going on and on, I'll just say that with the looking comes a trust, and with the trust comes this sense of it's all okay, you know, and it not in a flippant way, but in a deep, really deep-seated way, there's a trust that whatever our parts are and to play in this life, it'll just play. It's one metaphor that comes to mind is that, like, if we're a river, like, say I see myself as this river flowing to the sea, for example, then perhaps my life would be the bits of leaves and sticks that are kind of twirling around in the eddies, you know, which is nice. They form patterns and they have this existence briefly, but ultimately it doesn't matter, not because it's insignificant. It doesn't matter because it's not, you know, does that make sense? To you it probably does, but to the, you know, to the rest of us, I guess, but anyway.
It makes perfect sense, Brent. It just works. That's what you said. It just works, and it's so surprising. That's the most astonishing thing about it, that such a simple thing would work.
It just works.
It works consistently for everybody that does it.
Yeah.
Stay in touch, will you?
Oh, sure, yeah. I've been listening to you guys since 2007, and I come in and out, but, you know, and I've seen you in Berkeley. But, yeah, no, I'm always in touch, and I should check out the forums more. I think it sounds like there's a lot of stuff going on there now.
I really advise you to go to the forums because there's a richness of conversation there that you'll, I'm sure, appreciate.
Okay, great. Yeah, great. It's always nice to – I'm always excited when I see Carla send me an email. I know there's a webinar coming. So.
Yeah.
So thank you both. It's just a wonderful – I don't want to say mission, but I guess it is a kind of a mission in a way, but a very simple one.
Yes, right. You're right. You're right. You know, both counts.
Yeah, simple as it can be, you know. So and yet you need the infrastructure to reach the most amount of people, you know, the most ears, I guess you'd say.
Right? That's right. Once you see that this thing works, then the only thing I want to do, I know it works. You know, there's a lot I don't know about it, but what I do know is that it works, and it seems like it is absolutely required of me to do whatever I can do to get it to get the suggestion to everybody in the world. And the suggestion is so simple that it can be gotten to everybody in the world. So, right.
Yeah, right on.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, great. I'll let someone else speak in.
Okay.
All right, thanks,
John.
Thank
you, Brett.
Okay.
Thank you, Brett. David Atkinson. David, hello.
Yeah, I just wanted to add also when you're encouraging people to go to the forums to also consider joining the grassroots effort and putting their comments in there.
Absolutely,
when people come, you know, to the sort of statement that it just works, it seems like that anything they can offer about how it just worked and how it might, how to say that very simple thing to other people in some, or suggest it in some way that would intrigue them to look into it would be very helpful.
That's a good point, David, and I encourage everybody. There's every place on the website, there's a green button at the top that says grassroots. If you click on that, you will go to a place where you sign up to be part of the grassroots movement. And that opens to, and there is also for, without even having to join anything, there is the grassroots forum at the forums, in which there is a continuing conversation going on about these matters of how in practical terms to get this this simple suggestion out into the world. And then once you, if you sign up to become a part of that, then you will also be admitted to a private chat room we have, in which a lot of other conversations are going on about practical matters pertaining to the work of getting this out into the world. And we also have a series of webinars for the people who are part of the grassroots movement so that we can meet together and consider together these practical matters. And I encourage you, Brett, and anybody else who sees that this works and sees that if it works, that we really need to get it out into the world and not spend all our time kind of massaging our own delight at what has happened. If we have any inclination or skills or resources whatsoever that can be applied to bring this simple suggestion to the world, please, please sign up for the grassroots movement. Go to the grassroots forum. Look and see what we're up to there and come aboard and help us. We can make this happen. Okay, David?
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, good. Okay, anything else, David?
No, that's all.
Okay. Anybody else?
John and I are on the same...
Right, I remember.
Namslavka, yeah. Remember that from last time?
I do. What was your name again?
Slavka.
Slavka. Okay.
Yeah, we're at the same house now, so...
Right, gotcha.
And my question is, maybe a little for, like, clarification. When you talk about the fear of when you talk about the fear of living.
Yes, it's not the fear of living; it's the fear of life. But it's the fear of living too. Actually,
yes.
That's not a bad thing.
Right. So when you talk about the fear of life, is that like fear of all the experiences of positive and negative and all the emotions and all the pain and the suffering and the fear of just allowing all of that to come through your body and through your consciousness and just allowing it all to surface?
Yeah. When I speak of the fear of life, I mean, and understand something. When I speak of the fear of life, I'm not speaking of a particular experience, and I think you know that from what you said.
Right.
What happens, the fear of life creates a context, so that a context that holds, that has the outlook that life is dangerous, untrustworthy, and hurtful, and to be on guard against at all times. And that means that what that produces is a relationship between me and my life in which I try to keep as much distance from every single experience that comes to me as I possibly can. I try to keep it at arm's length so that I can watch out for it and figure out whether this is a good thing or a bad thing or something's going to harm me or something's going to help me or something I don't have to think about at all. So that what the context of the fear of life creates is distance, alienation from life. And a way so that nothing is felt fully, and it's everything. The inner work that goes on in the relationship with life is the constant monitoring and defining of incoming experience into one of three categories. Either it's something that will probably hurt me. It's something that it might help me, or it's something I don't have to worry about at all. It doesn't mean a thing. And every single arising experience is subjected to that same interrogation. And this, of course, all happens silently and invisibly under the surface, and what we feel is the particular negative experiences that we have associated with whatever incoming experience it is. I don't know if that's clear enough, but it's everything. It's life. It's a fear and a disengagement from and a disconnection from the experience of life. All of it. Thoughts, feelings, emotions, physical, everything.
Okay. And then the commentator puts all these things into different categories, and
right.
then acts reactions.
Yes, that's right. That's exactly right. Certain categories require certain actions and reactions. That's exactly right. And what happens when it goes is that, and what makes it go away is so simple. It's just this. And this is not, this that I offer to people is not like a therapeutic measure that can be like called upon when things get tough or this and that and the other thing. This is a one-time kind of shot of medicine. And what it entails is you trying to get the direct experience for almost no time, a tenth of a second. You trying to get the direct experience of what it actually feels like to be you. What it actually feels like, what me actually feels like to you before everything else is going on. And what you will discover is that you are an extremely simple, quiet presence. And it's you. It's not an external presence. You are a simple, quiet, unmoving presence that never changes. Never. That is never helped or harmed by anything that comes and goes. And this direct experience of that does not, the purpose of that is not to produce an understanding of what I said. The direct experience of that actually automatically destroys the context of fear from which we have lived our entire lives previously. And what happens when that happens is that the experience of life, the wild, untamable life, the experience of life, rushes in. And it takes us some time to establish a stable relationship with the wildness of life. But, it's so much different than living life like through a, it's like we wrap ourselves in plastic in order to not directly feel anything that comes in. You follow that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
You were talking to John last week about that. Like he said, there's like a wrapping or something that it goes like in between, and you talk to him about the I am-ness. So now I tell him, I love you. I love your I am-ness instead of I love you.
You can tell him anything you want, but you see that now one thing I want you to really be aware of, and that is the movement to call you I am-ness is a movement that is a remnant of the fear of life itself.
It's still there. Yeah.
It's you.
Yeah.
Right. It's not I am-ness. It's you.
Mm-hmm. Well, when we say I am, the part that we're used to seeing as I am is all our thoughts and emotions, all our programming, all the stuff that we get stuck in that comes and goes. And when I say I am-ness, I feel like that's like a deeper of I am
Just say me.
Just say me. Okay.
It's you. It's what you call me.
Right.
And that impulse to want to make it more beautiful, more developed, and so forth and so on. That impulse itself is a symptom of the context itself. And one thing that, for some reason or other, is, and well, I kind of understand why it would be, but the one thing that is kind of anathema to the context of fear is looking at you. That's the thing that sometimes creates a great deal of confusion and craziness. So all the things that relate to that I call you and that you call me, all those things are kind of have been infested with the need to make them abstract, to move them out of the direct experience of things and into abstractions about their actual nature. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter. It's you.
Right. Well, I feel that the me that doesn't change and that doesn't get affected by all the comings and goings of the mind and all the experiences that go through it. And I was just labeling that as the I am-ness more than just the me that comes and goes. So I was thinking of that.
There is
a deeper place where,
right.
I mean, it still can't be verbalized in words, but I'm
right.
pointing it to myself. When I feel the I am-ness, it's more of who I am rather than the comings and goings of the mind and all the experiences that we tend to not want to feel.
Yes, I understand that, but you don't need to make that distinction. The
right.
distinction is obvious. There is no me that comes and goes.
Right.
That stuff that comes and goes isn't me.
That's why I was saying that's, it is an I am-ness rather than me.
Right, but it is me. The I am-ness is me.
Right.
Throw that I am-ness away. Just toss
but
it in
every,
the garbage.
But I just can't verbalize even the word me doesn't do it. It just doesn't feel real. Even the word I am or me doesn't feel real. It doesn't.
Well, the words aren't real. I don't understand what you mean by that. The words are not real.
Right,
no
exactly.
Word. No.
So whether
word.
I call it I am-ness or me, it either one doesn't feel real. It's just.
But you see, here's the thing. Let me say this. I am-ness is further from you than me. Me is as close as you can get. And
right.
it still is a slight abstraction, but it's as close as you can get. It's not the same as I am-ness.
Right.
It's not the same. It's personal. It feels like person.
Right.
It feels like the essence of person. It's me.
Right, but neither one feels, if they both have the same flavor to me. Neither one feels real. Because when I'm not thinking about me, I'm not there.
I tell you, if you will try to get a taste of this that you're calling I am-ness and I am calling me,
yeah.
If you try to get a taste of it, try as me, not as I am-ness, and you will see that there's nothing about you that actually is described by I am-ness. There's nothing about you that's like that. You are simple. You are here. That's the most that can be said about you. And if you get a taste of that, just the slightest tenth of a second taste, try it. See if you can. If you can get a taste of that, and all of the commentary about, well, that doesn't feel any more real than this feels, all that commentary is a cloud of distraction that is being thrown up to keep you from getting the direct tenth of a second taste of the actuality of you. But if you try, you must succeed. You can't fail. Even if you think you've failed, you can't fail. And when you succeed, I promise you that that interest in what we have just been talking about will fade away, because it really is of no consequence. What's of consequence is life. That's what's of consequence. And life has no, is of no danger, is no threat to you. And the only way that that sense of being threatened or having to be careful about life or having to be careful about what I say about myself, all that sense is symptoms of the fear, symptoms of the context of fear. Please, if you have not, try right now, as we're speaking here, to see if you cannot get that simple taste, what it feels like to be you, you, what you call me. If you can remember something in the past, whether it's yesterday or 10 years ago or whatever, if you can think back to something you are doing, your life, in a moment in the past, you will see even easier that that me then is exactly the same me as now. Try. See if you can't get that.
Well, I am feeling that.
Okay.
And after your last podcast, I kind of even more so felt the beingness that I was that I was born with before I got all this programming about who I was. And
right. Yes, and right. That's true.
It was a radiant, inquisitive beingness.
You don't need to describe yourself. When you start describing yourself,
right,
you get away from yourself.
Right.
It's just you.
Right.
It's just you. That's all it is. Nothing special. And I tell you, and you have then succeeded. And I tell you that what you can look for happening in the future, I don't know, sometimes it's not, it doesn't always go the same for everybody, or the same periods and so forth. But there's a course that generally takes place. After a little bit of time, and you may already have felt the kind of relief and the, you know, like the things are much better than they were before and everything seems to be, I understand and all of that. That'll go on for a while. That'll pass. And then you may have experience of real kind of distress, worse than you've had in the past. And that distress that comes is precisely the experience of life rushing in. And life is everything. It's your thoughts about yourself. It's the experience of John. It's the experience of talking to me. It's the hunger, the scratching on your nose or whatever. It's all life, everything, every thought, every opinion, every movement, every relationship is your life rushing in on you. And you can expect that for most, there's a period of considerable confusion and distress. And when that passes, and it always passes, when that passes, you are free. Just free.
Yeah, that's happened to me last fall and most of the winter. And yes, it's exactly what you're saying. I've never had so much distress in my whole life as I
right.
did.
Gets and worse, yeah.
And even your words last time you were talking about it that it does pass, that just kind of helped confirm the fact that I wouldn't be stuck in that for the rest of my life. And
yes.
That distress. And it has been coming and going. That's why I started out with the conversation asking about, you know, the fear of living
right.
and just not allowing everything to come through, because then when all these things started coming through, I just had no choice but to, there was just no choice but to allow all the craziness and all the extremes to run through my body, and there was nothing I could do about it. It just, like, it was like opening Pandora's box.
And yes, that's right. That's very good. That's it.
And the Pandora's box kind of just flew open, and all these things started rushing through, and now they've kind of like, you know, like a dog that's been cooped up in the house all day, and the owner takes it to the park, and it runs like crazy until it wears itself out, and then comes back, and then it's peaceful again.
Listen, I really want you to do something for me, will you? I want you to go to the forum.
Yeah.
And I want you to look at at some of the postings in the forum, some of the recent postings in the forums. I'm trying to think of the name. There's a couple of them that I think would be really helpful for you. The forum name is Looking. And I'm assuming you know how to get to it. It's on every page of our website. There's a link to it. And there are a couple of recent postings from people who came to us some time ago and then kind of disappeared and now have come back to report on what actually has occurred with them over the period of time as a result of the looking. And I think that if you go and look into those forum postings, just look at it. Just, you know, you don't have to sign up or anything. Everybody can read them. That you'll find some confirmation and some practical understanding that'll make you feel good.
Okay. Well, I actually have my confirmation is that I've survived the whole thing, and I'm still untouched by any of it.
Right, that's right. So
I'm just allowing things to come and go, and I mean I can't not let them come and go anymore. And
that's it. You got it.
I can't do anything about it. It just does.
That's it. But go to the forums,
okay?
Become a part of this. This is a big thing that we're about here. And go to the forums, please. Would you do that for me?
Sure.
Looking, okay.
Looking.
Anything else? Yeah, the forum name is Looking. And there's a lot of stuff in there.
So anyway, to conclude, I just wanted to thank you because last time when you talked about it, you mentioned it again, that it does stop and it does calm itself down. And that just kind of gave me a more of a relaxation.
Yeah.
And less fear.
Yes, right. And the same effect is available by hearing what other people have to say, too.
Right.
Okay?
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Go to the forums, okay?
Yes, thank you so much. And thank
You're very welcome. Thank you. I'm really happy to hear from you. You're there. And things
well, and yeah, and what you said last time has been working, and each time you talk helps. Thank you.
Okay. You're very welcome.
Okay. Bye.
See you again. Bye. Okay. Anybody else have anything really urgent, or can I just kind of wrap this up now? I'd be happy to talk to anybody that wants to talk. Okay, then. I am really, really grateful for your presence here. This community of people is coming to life. It's really quite amazing. There's an energy and a purposefulness that's appearing within the community of people who are involved in the looking. I urge you and I encourage you to go to the forums, sign up for Grassroots, be well, take care of yourself, take care of one another, I love you all. Carla has some stuff that she has to say, and you have to listen to. And you're very lucky to do so. Okay? I'll see you next time, whenever that is, in whatever context. Thank you for your time.
You just listened to a worldwide online meeting with John Sherman, broadcast live from Ojai, California, on February 10th, 2013. For more live recordings, visit our podcast at www.justoneloop.org.